So if they're like, there is this like overall moral standard, right? And obviously some people don't abide by it. And he pointed out the Nazis. And like some people, like Luke pointed out, don't strive for it, right? So then is it like, is it any place of ours to hold people? Like, let's say we kind of got an inside scoop because we're reading this book, right? So we've got this look at like what the overall moral compass would be. Is it kind of our responsibility, or do we not have any right to hold other people to the moral standard that they don't even think is real?
Yeah.
Right? So this would go back to like the gay marriage thing. We're like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah,
she
yeah.
has sex before marriage, that kind of
totally.
Stuff. Like, we would believe that and think it's like morally it's
totally.
Wrong, but other people don't. So do we have any place to hold other
totally.
People to that standard?
And it's a fantastic question.
Yes.
Like, if you look at where this question goes back to, like, let's jump back 17 centuries. Like, let's go back to Constantine. So Constantine, at, what is this, like 312, the Battle of Milvian Bridge, he goes and he becomes a Christian based off of the sign that he sees in the sky. And becomes a Christian. You know, not much of the empire at that point is Christian, but the parts that are actually alive and thriving and not, like, falling apart are. That's pretty decisive by that point. So he goes and he becomes a Christian, and then he goes and becomes full emperor, so emperor of both halves of the empire, east and west. So instead of, you know, Christians at this point being this persecuted minority, suddenly you have the emperor being a Christian, which is crazy. Well, what does that mean? What do you do with that? What do you do when your evangelism works and the emperor is converted by it? Like, what actually happens? And there's a number of questions that come along with that, and what you're getting at is like really foundational to it. To what degree does Constantine have a right or have a duty to impose what he believes is true revelation on society? And I think that really the only way that you can answer that question is to look at what he did and look at the fruit of it. If you want a really good reading on this, there's a book I actually got my sister. It's called Defending Constantine by Peter Lighthart, and it's a really, 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 really excellent book. If you want, I can make you a copy of just the conclusion, because the last, like, of all the chapters that are there, I think the conclusion is the strongest one. But the whole book is extremely helpful. Like, Leanne read it last summer, and it was really, really, really helpful for her in dealing with these kinds of issues. Because, look at, for instance, a great example is the Colosseum. So the Colosseum is a place where, what do you do if you're a Roman? What do you do for entertainment?
Kill people.
Yeah, you kill, like, you watch people be killed. That's like, that's what your, you know, that's what your form of entertainment is you go to the Colosseum and they feed people to lions and they have all kinds of really, really, really interesting ways of killing people. Like, they've come up with all kinds of really fascinating ways to do it. If you read it, like, wow, there's almost a part of you, like, the grotesque side of me is like, I would really kind of enjoy seeing one of these just because it's so weird and I never even thought of something like that. It's crazy stuff. Well, Constantine becomes a Christian, becomes emperor. What does he do? Well, he closes the Colosseum. The Colosseum has been a mainstay of Roman society for a very, 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 very long time. Constantine looks at the revelation that he has, which he believes is the revelation of the true God, which says, look, this is not what we're meant to do for entertainment. This is not how humans are meant to live. Regardless of if these people are really convicts, if the people that are there that are being killed, they really deserve to die, this is not what Christ teaches. To see our enemies die like this is not consistent with what Christ taught with respect to what we're supposed to do to our enemies. So what does he do? He closes it. He uses his power that he has, and he imposes his power such that this doesn't happen anymore. Which, for myself, I'm looking at that, and there's a part of me, and I think we have to feel both sides of this, there's a part of me which says, I feel uncomfortable with that. I feel uncomfortable with the idea of imposing power because I'm such a libertarian at heart. I'm such a, like, everybody kind of do their own thing and it's all going to be okay. But for centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries. People have been doing their own thing, and it has not been okay. And I think that fundamentally, that idea that I have is more lie than truth. That if you just leave people to their own, that things are just going to be okay on a societal level. I don't think that you can separate religious truth from politics and from broader society in any sort of complete way. And if you want to do that, that's okay, but you need to be willing to have the Colosseum reopen then. I think if you want to do that, you have to be willing to return to what pre-Christian society was, you know, what it looked like. And it's really important, if we're going to do that, to really look at what that was, the things that entailed. Because the Colosseum is one example, but you can go left, right, and center all over the place. If you want a society, I mean, I'm saying society like this one thing, there's any number of societies, and still societies all over the place on Earth, where the idea of, you know, all humans being created equal, being endowed by certain inalienable rights by their creator, such as this, this, and this. If you want any number of societies for whom that would actually be the exact opposite of the truth, look at all of the ones prior to Constantine. Look at the one directly before Constantine. You don't have anything like that. And that's people just doing their own thing, just being left to their own devices without any sort of revelation, any sort of influence from Christianity. There's still a piece of me that's uncomfortable with that. There's still a piece of me which is like, well, this means that you're going to have some kind of theocracy then. But the thing is, we have a kind of theocracy right now. If we're looking at our Declaration of Independence, it's a very soft theocracy, but the things that are there, you know, we take these truths to be self-evident, that all people are endowed with certain unalienable rights by their creator. So they're endowed with certain unalienable rights. There's these things that come, which says that everybody has these things, everybody's equal, whatever, by their creator. They don't just come from nowhere. There's a creator that gives them, and it includes this, this, and this. Those things are themselves a form of fairly secularized Protestantism. Those don't come out of nowhere. If you look in the history of ideas, like look at what Thomas Jefferson is like. Look at his own theology. Those are Thomas Jefferson's own Protestant theology at that point. It's a little bit watered down, but that's what it is. And those things are enshrined, you know, in our Constitution as a kind of theocracy. We don't call it that, and we're not comfortable with it. And I'm not.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
He's not comfortable.
Yeah, I'm really uncomfortable. So I'm gonna knock off those glasses. You can take that. I'm not really comfortable with that. I'm not really like I'm trained. It's ingrained in me to be uncomfortable with theocracy of any kind. But if I look, if I'm really to look at the foundational ideas in our, you know, in the foundational documents for our nation, they're theocratic. Like, there's no way around it. They're theocratic. There is no sense in which they're appealing to a pure reason, which is uninfluenced by, you know, by very particular religious writings and religious ideas of a particular time and place. Like, that's just the case. I don't think we can escape it. I think if we try to escape that, we're just playing smoke and mirrors, basically. Like, we're not looking at the things for what they are. So, answer to question A. If you have some kind of revelation to the truth, anything, whatever happens to be, what do you do with it? I think you have some sort, and again, I say this with great hesitancy because I still feel very uncomfortable with it. I think that there is some kind of responsibility that you have, whatever the way is, to persuade people of it and to try to show people that truth. And can that mean in some situation, like if I have a, if I have a child and that child is going to go and do something that's really wrong, whatever happens to me, is it possible that in some situation I might have to physically coerce, like my own child, for instance, into whatever the thing is that's true that they just don't happen to see yet? Sure. Let's put that on the record. You know, if my child has a syringe in their hand, is there a chance that I might have to physically take that syringe out of their hands? If you put it in that, it's possible. I might have to impose my will in that way, which is something that I'm really uncomfortable with. But I also think I look at the options. And I'm like, I don't really see another option here. At the same time, the thing that you have to say the whole way through this is, to him much is given, much will be required. And so if this is the position that you find yourself in, where you look at everything and you say, I think that I have some sort of insight in here, which in my situation happens to be unique. Not that nobody else knows anything else and that there's nothing else to have to learn from everybody else, because that's absolutely not the case, and that's the opposite of humility. But I think that there is some kind of insight that I have here. All that does for you in your situation is increase the accountability that you have before the Lord, and increases the degree to which you need to be a servant to others. If that is the case, the only answer is servitude. There's no other way. There's no sense in which you can go and lift yourself up and say, I've got the answer, everybody, so I will be your king. Everyone bow down to me, and I will tell you the truth. Like, you can't do Plato's philosopher king thing with this. The only thing you can do is be a servant. That's the only way it works. And I think the only way that the broader society, or even if it's your own kid with the syringe, the only way that the kid with the syringe is going to see that you have the truth is that you are only taking the syringe away from them in the context of you sacrificing yourself for them.
Right, and I think in cases like that, like, your kid with the syringe is a really obvious example of, like, oh, here's this person who's about to do something that obviously is going against this moral code that we all see, or that, yeah, at least that I see, right? And then you get into fuzzier areas where it's like, okay, we're just talking about gay marriage. It's like, should I bust into a gay person's home, like, force them off each other? And be like, this is my duty to, like, I can't let you two do this. No, like,
yeah.
But then you get into extreme cases of, like, should, like, people be using physical force to hold other people accountable for their moral laws? Like,
totally.
No, you get into areas where you're, like, totally invading people's privacy and stuff, and, like,
totally. It's honestly, like, I'm at no point am I gonna be able to give you, like, a easy one size fits all comprehensive thing, which is like, here's what you do, go for it. Here's the fun system. But it's interesting. Take the example. Hello.
What's up, y'all?
Hi.
How you doing?
Do you want to sit down with your friends with us?
Sure.
Okay. Cool.
There's some chairs over there and some chairs over here. We can scoop.
Oh, yeah. Totally. What is your name again, by the way?
I'm Gina.
What is it?
Gina.
Cool.
I'm joined.
Take the kid with a syringe example. Because on one end, we're all thinking, everybody at this table is thinking, oh yeah, this is easy, kid with a syringe, you take it away. But man, like, I've been living in Vancouver for the past 3 years. And the kid with a syringe question is not an easy one. And most of Vancouver has come out on the other side of the debate that we would be on in the kid with a syringe thing. Like, that's just plain old the way it is. It's, and I mean, I don't think that all of Canada is necessarily like that, whatever, but that's the way that Vancouver is. Vancouver is in a situation where it's so libertarian, it's so hands-off, that if somebody wants to go, if you've got a kid that wants to have a syringe, the best thing you can do is make sure it's clean. And that's like, That's just the way it is. Like, I have friends that work for organizations that are essentially doing that. The best thing that they can see themselves doing is, like, look, people have no hope anyway, you know? And if they're just really depressed or whatever, you know, they're probably just going to do this stuff anyway. There's not really any, you know, sense in them trying to stop them. So the best thing that we can do is to, you know, try to mitigate the damage as best as we can. And that means we'll give them as many. So instead of, like, taking the syringe away from the kid, You're giving him a box of clean ones. So even in that situation, it's like, for us at this table, pretty obvious case. I just don't think that you can even say that in the aggregate. All these questions are hard. There's no, so what, you know, what do you do as far as, you know, do you break in? Well, if you're asking me in a practical sense, do we do that? My sense is probably not. My sense is that's probably not going to do anything. And if you look in the history of the church, I don't think that the church's response to sexual morality of any kind has been, man, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get some spies. We're going to get some secret police, They're gonna have like tasers and medieval equivalents of tasers, and like we're gonna find them out. We're gonna find the adulterers. We're gonna smoke them out. And we're gonna have an adulterer hunt. Neither in the early church or the medieval church or the any church does that seem like that is the policy that with which the church approaches things like any kind of sexual immorality whatsoever. But it does speak clearly about it. And as far as the relation of the church to these kinds of things, it speaks clearly of this in few. And the relation of Christ to these things speaks clearly on all those matters. But if you do break in, let me know how it goes.
Okay.
I'd be really curious to find out.
If I started deciding to stop every immoral act I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kids smoking and I just whacking
yeah.
out their
hand. You're like a Christian Judge
like
Dredd.
I'm like a Batman.
Yeah.
It's
Bible Man.
Oh, Christ.
Batman.
Batman's here.
Come on.
I will see if I can get that stuff from Defending Constantine for you, because it's a really hard issue, and it's really difficult because it's something where I feel both sides of it really strongly. But I do think that what looking at this issue does is exposes that there are things in our own society that we take as like fundamental assumptions, which we have to look at. Because we have the idea that it's like, oh yeah, this is just the Constitution. Like, there's no like theological thing that's here. It's just that this is just what reason gets us. Well, why don't you look through the rest of human history, look through the rest of what reason gets, or even just in right now in humanity. Look in China. They're reasonable people. They're very reasonable. Does this get them the same ideas with respect to women? Does it get them the same ideas as we want to come out with? With respect to equality, does it get them the same, like, or are they just not reasonable? Are they all just a dumb group of people? They're just all uniformly dumb. I don't think that's the case. And if you're looking at what the differences are between one side and the other, it's fundamentally ideas, and those ideas have a particular source. And we can try to escape that, but I just don't think there's any way out, as uncomfortable as it is. So, dude, it's really challenging stuff. It really is, and I'm glad that you went there, because it's very very.
Really, I just literally asked the question and I just re-asked it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, credit goes to Kevin. We're giving credit to Kevin. What do you guys want to do here? Do you guys want to read through one more of these really quickly? Because it's already 7:30 now.
Personally, I like.
Okay.
You guys are totally welcome to. My grandpa's in town, and I have like a couple hours to see him tonight.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Are you guys in similar kind of position?
You guys are totally welcome to.
How many pages is this next one?
I think it's only a couple.
Let's do it real quick, and then maybe what we'll do is we'll save any questions on this one. If there's any burning ones, we'll get to them. If not, we'll save them to the next thing, because we're going to go help my friend move, and so it'd be good to do that. Levi, do you want
to
start with this next one?
Yeah, sure. Help Grandpa.
I'm going to go watch Netflix.
Chapter 3.
No,
do I press a button, Luke, to
yes.
make
I think
the thing stop?
It's going, actually.
But we're
going
to stop it now.